This podcast is part of the Democracy Group.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. We are talking politics and religion without killing each other. I am your host, Corey. Wait, let me go back and say that again. Without killing each other. I'm not going to say killing, but I will say killing, because it's important that we talk about politics and religion without killing each other. I am your host, Corey Nathan, and it is an honor to be a part of the Democracy Group, a network of podcasts that examines what's broken in our democracy and how we can work together to fix it. And remember to subscribe or follow, depending on your app. And of course, leave us a good rating and write a review. The reviews in particular really do help, as I've been saying for a few weeks now. I will put a link in our show notes to make it easy for you to do just that. Writing a review, all of this stuff, it helps get the word out so more people can participate in the conversation and engage in important topics like the one I wanted to flesh out with you today. And that is the perniciousness of them. And I'm putting the air quotes around them. The perniciousness of them. Do you know what I mean? So I'm imagining my brother, he's probably making fun of me, like, hold on, let me pull out my dictionary. I'm sure that my brother knows, that Eddie knows what pernicious means. The dude's got more degrees than a freaking thermometer. But he just likes to give me crap for using words like pernicious. Anyway, I just thought pernicious or perniciousness is exactly the right word for this problem I'm talking about. Pernicious means having a harmful effect, especially in a gradual or subtle way. It's a very specific condition that I think perfectly describes what I hear many different people saying in all kinds of ways. And listen, it's a pattern I'm certainly not immune from falling into, the perniciousness of them. And don't forget the air quotes. So what do I mean by that? Well, I've shared stories, and many have experienced how it's a default go-to of whether it was my old church, folks that I was in Bible study with, or, you know, the people that my kids were going to school with, but more broadly of right-wing media. So in prepping for this, in fleshing out this idea, I took a quick, you know, did a quick search, took a quick gander at what some of the top podcasts are putting out there. So, you know, quick search, top conservative podcasts, just to see what came up. Ben Shapiro, number one. Very first line in his latest episode, as I'm prepping these notes, it says, the Supreme Court rules in favor of keeping Trump on the ballot and the left melts down. Actually, I'm doing my Mark Levin voice, but and the left melts down, capital L, left. Speaking of Mark Levin, latest episode, right out of the gate, he says, we have three radical leftist justices who do not care about the Constitution and know that Marxists will object to the counting of the ballots for Trump, claiming he is an insurrectionist. Radical leftist judges, Marxists, they don't care about the Constitution. We know they're Marxists. We know what they will do. He just grates on my nerves, that dude. Dan Bongino, let's do that one. These are all just right at the top, conservative podcast. So I just did a quick look. And by the way, I honestly, seriously, just didn't have to look that far. Some of this stuff I listen to hear what arguments are being made, even if a certain pundit like Mark Levin is not my cup of tea, but if they garner a huge audience, as someone like Bongino or Levin, certainly they certainly do, it's worthwhile to tune in here and there, if for no other reason than some of your friends, some of my friends, relatives, neighbors, they're listening to this stuff. Collectively, these guys got millions of listeners. So that said, I can only take so much. I got to know my limits. Also, I should say, Ben Shapiro, you know, I've said this before, I see him as a little different than a Levin or a Bongino or some Matt Walsh. I'm not a fan, obviously, of the culture warrior stuff, the blowing up Barbie, that song and dance. But he does make some thought-provoking arguments. So some of these, you can cull through some of the nonsense, some of the garbage, but so there are certain people that are actually worth listening to if you're you do have to be discerning. You have to know your boundaries. But I have found some folks to have decent takes that are worth considering, you know, and then just like shopping cart method, do away with what you don't need. But in truth, so much of this is like media fast food at best, or more literally, as Denver Riggleman was telling us just last year, it's actually like media or podcasting crack cocaine. Like literally, our brains have chemical reactions to this sort of angertainment by conflict entrepreneurs like Mark Levin, like Dan Bongino, like Matt Walsh. So anyway, here's what Bongino said. Very first line. In this episode, I discuss the upcoming Super Tuesday primaries and the Libs' latest double down on crazy. The Libs' latest double down on crazy. Or Matt Walsh. Distraught leftists peeing their own faces in protest against Supreme Court ruling. Which, by the way, is the same imagery Shapiro used in his episode title. Like, the pee in their face. Like, it's amazing. So, anyway, leftists, Marxists, the left, the Libs. So, I have a lot of questions. Number one, how broadly are you defining the left? Is that anyone who's to your left? Anyone who doesn't listen to Levin or Bongino or Matt Walsh spew the same talking points, let alone believe all this stuff? If you take a quick glance at a few of these top shows, it seems like they're getting the same talking points, like word for word, and just riffing on it with a specific objective of whipping up the anger of your audience, of instilling so much fear into your listeners. But here's another question. What passes for conservative these days? I just posted an article from George Conway, very prominent conservative lawyer. He was even approached about being Trump's first AG, attorney general. But after I posted, I was told in the most curt, indignant way that George Conway is not only not conservative, he has Trump derangement syndrome. Same for David French. David French! An attorney who objectively can be credited with advancing more First Amendment cases, including freedom of speech, freedom of religion, or free exercise, free exercise cases, mind you, that many of my progressive friends were very much opposed to. David French advanced more of these cases than just about any attorney of this century. David French, who even after establishing himself as a very prominent conservative lawyer, chose to volunteer for the army and was deployed to Iraq serving in a combat zone. George Conway, a guy who is, he's not just a part of the Federalist Society. He was president of his law school's chapter, the Federalist Society. So why would these guys be considered part of the left or rhinos, a pejorative for a Republican in name only? Why are there conservative bona fides not only questioned, but dismissed out of hand? Why are guys like Conway and David French and Judge Michael Luttig now all of a sudden just assumed to be one of them or these people? It's simple. Because they criticize Donald Trump. That's it. Because they are not on board the Trump train. Now, it's not to say that my buddy, who I was in touch with just last night, would put it that way. But his impression of a George Conway, he's not even going to read the article. He sees the name George Conway, or maybe he sees The Atlantic, or there's other publication, New York Times, Washington Post. Oh, no, I would never read any of that nonsense. But George Conway, his impression of George Conway, he doesn't read the article, so it's not in the substance. His impression is very much shaped by Bongino, Hannity, Levin, whoever he's listening to as his main source of information and analysis. So as we picked up on above, there's this fascinating consistency of message down to like weird fetish imagery, pee on our own faces. Seriously, I saw it on half the references I looked up. It was just weird. But don't take my word for it. Do your own quick search. Top conservative podcast. Scan down the episode titles. Look at the show notes. See for yourself. You'll be fascinated by how many of them are saying exactly the same thing. Like, not sort of the same thing or figuratively the same thing. Exactly the same thing. Same topic, same talking points, same weird freaking imagery. Well, what's this obsession? I don't know. I can't get it out of my brain. Like, I can't get it out of my head right now. Peeing in one's own face. I don't understand. Okay. I need to pause for a second. In doing some research, I did come across a really compelling analysis of headlines from far right and right leaning sources. And this particular report looked at traffic on all the top news sites. What's striking is how much traffic has dipped on all of these sites from 2020 to 2024. You know, the top one obviously is Fox News. That was down 24% from 2020 to 2024. The, let's see, Washington Examiner down 66%. Washington Times 82%. The Blaze down 60%. There, I wouldn't consider this far right. National Review 71%. Breitbart 87%. Holy crap! So I'm just looking at this as I'm talking. I'm looking at this chart. Now, some of the other sites that aren't from the conservative, you know, that aren't part of conservative media, CNN was down 20%. New York Times was down 22%. But like Washington Free Gateway Pundit. So anyway, I'll share the link in the show notes. It's definitely noteworthy. The reason I bring it up is if traffic on Fox News's website is down 24%, Breitbart's is down 87%. 87%, and Gateway Pundit's down 54. Where are my buddies Darren and John and Sean getting their news-oriented analysis? These are sources friends of mine get their commentary from. And yeah, it's specifically curated, shall we say, going back to the concept of bespoke realities, you'll remember what we've spoken about over the last few weeks. So I want to better understand my neighbor, my friend, and how he's learning about and processing news. And the truth is they're getting it from Dan Bongino, Ben Shapiro, Mark Levin, I don't know, Candace Owens, I guess. Before we move on, I wanted to tell you about something else that's important. Money. Specifically your money. In all seriousness, I wanted to tell you about my advisor and my friend, George Meza. George runs Meza Wealth Management. And with George, it's not just about money. It's about helping us manage our present and plan for our future. And unlike a lot of other firms out there, George and I actually have a relationship. He knows me. He knows my family. And I know his wonderful family. I also know his firm and the incredible team he's put together, from his chief investment officer to some of the other great people in his office, like Jessica, their head of operations, that are always there to help me and with all aspects of our portfolio. You see, the thing is, I got a lot going on. I guess we all got a lot going on, and I don't have the time to watch our investments all day, every day. And even if I did, I don't have the experience and expertise that George's team collectively has. So we get the entire Meza Wealth Management team, all their expertise and all their integrity. And again, it's based on George knowing me personally, knowing my goals, and even the kind of risk that's appropriate for me to take, which, by the way, could change from one season to the next. And they're on top of all of that. So if you want George Meza and Meza Wealth Management to be on your team, just visit their website, MezaWealth.com. That's M-E-Z-A Wealth.com, www.MezaWealth.com. And that will also be in our show notes, so you can check that. And now, back to our show. So getting back to my questions, of these, you know, going through these show notes and listening to some of their content, just looking at top conservative podcasts, we could also do an analysis of, you know, not just the podcast, but like the social media, like Twitter. It's become a lot of folks, a lot of conservatives have, I hate to use that word because it's like been stolen from real conservatives, but just, you know, right-wing people, let's say, have found their way back there. It's become a huge go-to all over again since Elon took it over. Or Truth Social, another one I hate. I hate using that word. The fact that a word like truth has been hijacked. Anyway, it is what it is. Either way, we could do a deep dive on other sources of news and commentary like that. Whatever's replaced this precipitous drop in Fox News and Gateway Pundit. But since I'm a podcaster and podcasting is growing by an order of magnitude, we can just stay focused on that. So one other question that's important to explore is how the Hannitys and Buck Sextons are, that's another conservative right-wing podcaster, how they're presenting their portraits and asserting their conclusions about the left or liberals or whatever way shows in this genre are labeling this very broad category of people, media, politicians, anyone and anything remotely outside of this particular ecosystem, this bubble. So one way is what our recent guest, Nancy French, pointed out. Remember, Nancy was one of the most sought after ghostwriters in Republican politics and conservative media. Meaning when a conservative politician needed to have talking points or wanted to write a book even, they'd hire Nancy to come up with those talking points or write their book for them. So that's a part of how it worked. Ghostwriters, writers behind the scenes actually coming up with 3 or 4 word stingers that could be repeated over and over again, whether they're going on a show that night, doing a media hit. And you know, they write it for any number of politicians and pundits, and then followers and listeners could easily remember those catchphrases and talking points themselves. And that, by the way, speaks to the pernicious aspect of all this. It's harmful. Any particular talking point or phrase gets traction gradually. It sneaks its way in. And then if one person says it, 2 people say it, all of the top conservative podcasters say it, you get a winner. A pernicious, insidious winner of a catchphrase of libs peeing in their own faces. Oh man, I wish I didn't see that. I can't unsee it now. Anyway, what Nancy was saying, and this is something that both Joe Walsh and Charlie Sykes brought up, the 2 guys who had nationally syndicated top-rated radio shows on the right for many years. And that is, you know, actually, I should say, Charlie and Joe Walsh had top conservative radio shows in the pre-Trump era, so it's important to mention that. But all of them, Nancy, Charlie, and Joe, all mentioned nut picking, meaning a story of some guy somewhere in Wisconsin or Wyoming or wherever would do something really crazy or stupid or just evil. And that person could be loosely tied to the left or labeled a lib or a Democrat. And then the entire story or an entire show would be about this is what they do. Meaning this is what the left does. This is who the Democrats are. This is how the libs operate, you know, the libs. And that's the whole recipe. Pick out one nut out of a country of 330 million people that can be somehow connected to your supposed enemy and make a whole show on this is what they do. This is what they do. Nut picking. It's not particularly accurate. It's not particularly new. It's not a nuanced way to assess what's happening in the news. But it is effective. It's effective because, as the old saying goes, if it bleeds, it leads. And as I said before, and as we've covered extensively on this program, stories that stimulate this hatred, a sense of hatred and give rise to fear, it's addictive. It sells. It's scalable. It's duplicatable if you want to talk about it from a business model. And it's just easy. It's lazy even. I'll say it. It's just lazy when you're able to generalize and by generalizing, mischaracterize, and by mischaracterizing, it's much easier to demonize and vilify. So it gives folks a weird sense of, I don't know, comfort in a way. It's like, instead of having to dig deep and try to understand a complex story and the intricate dynamics of what's happening in the world, it's easier if someone can just tell you, especially if they tell you in some sort of entertaining way, why it's happening, who's to blame, and sort of spoon feed you what you should think about it. So in that way, it works. When I read the first line of the show notes of Dan Bongino's or Ben Shapiro's latest episode, or I listened to the first 7 minutes of Hannity's radio show, then I know exactly what my old buddy Darren is going to think on any given issue, even down to how he's going to phrase his argument. And frankly, I think it's sad. It's sad because I know certain guys to be smarter than that, to, in other walks of their lives, to be better people than that, like capable of better things or having higher virtues when it comes to, say, their dedication to their kids or being there for a neighbor or helping some stranger change their tire in the rain. But when it comes to this stuff, how we engage on political issues or social issues, which is important, it's how we figure out how to live among each other as a community, as a society. Darren and my other buddy Scott, candidly, they got an Achilles heel because, for one thing, they're not. And I've talked about this with them, by the way. So I'm not talking out of school. I've shared my thoughts exactly on this issue with them. So, you know, for one thing, they're not actually talking to liberals, progressives, Democrats, what have you, at least as far as they know. This is the thing. It's an impression of liberals. They're not actually talking to liberals. So they don't know. They don't know what the hell they're talking about. That's why they think somebody like me is a liberal, because they don't actually get to have these conversations with left of center, actual liberals. They think somebody like me is a liberal, a Buckleyan, Burkean, Sowellian conservative, or somebody like David French is a liberal, for God's sake. But because I'm someone who doesn't regurgitate the same talking points, they've just fully ingested. I sound like a liberal to Darren and to Sean and to Scott. I'm one of those people. Because the only way they're learning about anyone who disagrees with Bongino's takes or Matt Walsh's takes is from Matt Walsh himself. I mentioned this before. My buddy Darren said he forces himself to watch enough NBC to be informed of the other side and to supposedly consider other points of view. Turns out the only way he's getting anything from MSNBC is from clips that Ben Shapiro plays on his show. Not that just tuning into MSNBC is the best way to get a robust left of center analysis. Not that it's not, but you could read some, I don't know, E.J. Dionne, Will Salatin, some reports out of Center for American Progress, or go to some of my favorite right of center outlets like the Dispatch or the Bulwark, which, you know, Austin made clear does not count because they supposedly have Trump derangement syndrome. So Darren and Scott and Sean and lots of my friends that I talk to about this stuff, you know, people from Grace Baptist or Trinity Classical Academy, they really have no idea how any individual thinks that doesn't happen to be watching the same shows or listening to the same podcasts. If people like me aren't speaking the same language and totally in line with the right talking points, and the right level of outrage on any given topic, well, we're all just part of the left or a lib or a leftist. And look, if any of my buddies who are Trump supporters are still listening, they're probably screaming at me right now, saying like, well, what about the left? They do it too. They're so much worse. And yeah, I understand why there'd be a reflexive impulse to feel that way. I just covered, you know, for the last however many minutes, exactly why you're probably feeling that way. But here's the thing. That's a you problem. One of my favorite expressions of late. That's a you problem. So no, I'm not giving the left a free pass. No, I'm not saying anyone who's left of center would never do such a thing. What I am saying is that I feel zero obligation to play the both sides game. So much damage has been done by falling prey to such, like, these are just distractions. And they're distractions because the fact is, if you did a search on, say, a top progressive podcast and go through the same exercise I outlined above that I outlined earlier about conservative podcasts, what you'll find if you're looking at Al Franken's show or Best of the Left, which is an actual podcast, or even shows like The Young Turks and Pod Save America, who I actually stopped listening to because I heard the phrase, this is going back to, I don't know, 2018, 2019. I heard the phrase, these are the same people who, I just heard it one too many times and I just couldn't listen anymore. But I've noticed when I was looking at their, you know, their recent shows, that they've gotten away from that sort of language. So when you look at these shows, there's a dip. There are criticisms. There's attacks for sure. But, you know, when you read through it or read through the transcripts or listen to the show, the criticisms are actually directed at individuals. Obviously, Donald Trump is an individual. When they say Donald Trump, it's like me. I had to clarify with somebody yesterday, dude, you know that when I'm criticizing Donald Trump, I'm not talking about you, right? I'm talking about Donald freaking Trump. That doesn't mean I'm talking about all of Trump's supporters, you know, or in these shows, Best of the Left, Al Franken show, you would see like very specific groups of people, like Republicans in the House. Not all Republicans, not all people who voted for a Republican ever, or they'll say somebody specific like Speaker Mike Johnson. Or if they're covering an issue like conspiracy theories, the show notes might single out QAnon or the Proud Boys in terms of violent nationalism. So if the them is specific like that, and there's documented reasoning as to why a they, like Trump appointees and aides who participated in illegal attempts to subvert an election, yeah, we can talk about them as in a very specific group of people who are part of a very specific set of events. But when you do the opposite, pick out some random dude who did some crazy crap to try to draw the conclusion that that's what they all do, they as in anyone who isn't smoking on the Bongino crack pipe, yeah, I got a problem with that. Actually, we all got a problem with that. So that said, I will say this out of fairness. A lot more of us do fall into this trap if we're really being honest, right? I've joked around about, I don't know, Yankee fans. They have no character. Yankee fans have no and I can actually write a dissertation on this. It takes no character to be a Yankee fan, but Mets fans, we have to suffer. We've had to earn those few good seasons that we've had. We're real fans. yeah, obviously I'm joking around, but sort of. But we do this with all kinds of groups of people, like with Trump supporters. How often do any number of us group all these people into one bucket or or basket? Remember that basket of deplorables? And listen, I don't believe we all think that way, but it is a trap that we got to be diligent about not falling into. All these Trump supporters, those people, them. So I'll just remind you what David French said on that call about launching the after party when he was asked whether there were any Trump supporters involved. And he basically said he doesn't know and he doesn't care. In a way, I could tell he hopes that there are some Trump supporters there. I mean, that's part of the project, you know? But he said he doesn't know because that's not a qualification or a disqualification for joining a project to help heal divisions. What he did say, what he said isn't negotiable is how we engage with each other. So in this case, the after party is a church-oriented project. It's the qualification they'd use is fruit of the spirit, imagery from the Bible that I've used before and mentioned before. So, you know, but more broadly, regardless of who you vote for, or who you support, if you're committed to coming into the public square or a church group or any of our shared spaces in a neighborly way, and do your best to exhibit patience and kindness, great. But if malice, pridefulness, divisiveness, if that all characterizes your default or your modus operandi, frankly, go pound sand. We have plenty of that. You know, I don't want to have anything to do with it. And we need to introduce some antibodies that are more characterized by the fruit of the spirit. Whether you're a Christian or not, everybody can, any people of goodwill can agree to certain virtuous behavior. So I always want to see someone on an individual level. That's really what it comes down to. Regardless of whether you voted for Trump or not, regardless of whether you voted for Mike Garcia or not. I mean, I just voted for Republican Suzette Valadares. As I've talked about her before, she's running for our state's Senate district. And I did it proudly. But, you know, you might remember Pete Dominic came on the show. He'd have me tarred and feathered. It's a sin in his eyes, even though he's an atheist, I think. I don't know. I don't know if he'd have me actually tarred and feathered, but he certainly made it clear that even considering such a thing is unthinkable and evil. How could you vote for someone like that? You know, someone like that, he said. Like what, Pete? Like someone who doesn't have your desired letter before their name, the magic D? Someone who doesn't agree with you on every little thing? That renders that person, that human being, is nothing more than one of them. And the point is we're all individuals, human beings. Each one of us has our own story, our own reasons for voting the way we do on any given issue or politician, for believing what we do. We're not a them or one of those people. And we all deserve the dignity of being seen as such, as unique, just like we are. no matter how much we disagree with each other. So all that to say, I'm going to do my best to not fall prey to the perniciousness of them. And I hope you will too. As my friend Liz Joyner has said, it's hard to hate someone up close. I love that. It's hard to hate someone up close. So as always, if you dig what we're doing here, remember to follow or subscribe or whatever the Apple lets you do. Rate us and write that review. And tell somebody about this program. You know, tell them about it. Talk about the subject. You know, I'm sure I'm wrong on a lot of stuff. I'd love to hear your thoughts. You know, we're easy to find. It's politicsandreligion.us. So spell out the A-N-D, www.politicsandreligion.us. Or if you're looking on your app, just type in T-A-L-K-I-N, no G, T-A-L-K-I-N, politics. So talking without the G, talking politics. Usually it just comes up there. You might have to put in talking politics and religion, and that should definitely come up. Or you can find me on a bunch of the socials at Corey S. Nathan. That's CoreyS Nathan, at Corey S. Nathan. Now, go talk some politics and religion with them. One of them. No, I'm just kidding. But make the them like a human being, you know, an individual. Look at them as an individual. And then talk to them about politics and religion with gentleness and respect. And have a great week.